Merritt. Doc had been in Omaha, Nebraska when his mind blurred and he collapsed, to awaken in a sterile laboratory in the year 1998, surrounded by a convocation of faceless scientists in masks and gowns. At that moment, you could have reasonably suggested that he was 28 years old. Nobody who'd ever encountered Doc Tanner would have said that he suffered fools gladly, or indeed that he ever suffered them at all. As soon as he found out what had happened to him, Doc devoted all of his considerable intellect to trying to make the cron jump back to his own time. But his keepers were too alert for that to happen. But he consistently made himself a serious nuisance for the authorities. Eventually, only a matter of days before the nuke holocaust of January 2001, the Administration Committee of Operation Kronos ordered Doc drugged and pushed forward in time. As far as they were concerned, the thorn in their side was gone forever. If he eventually made a temporal landing safely, 100 years or so ahead, then he wasn't likely to ever come back to haunt them. As it happened, they saved his life. Within 23 days, they were all dead. But it was that jump that changed Doc forever. Nobody had ever quite understood how the process of trolling worked. Now he looked a sparky 60-odd years old, with a mind permanently tipped by the horrific experiences that he'd suffered. Experiences that made him totally unique in the history of the human race.
Penny for your thoughts, my dear fellow.
Ryan realized that he was holding an empty mug, and that he'd been miles away.
Just brooding over memories, Doc. Nothing important, though.
Things past, not worth forgetting, my friend. Things to come, not worth anticipating. You and John Barrymore Dix are ready for your journey?
Pretty well.
I disbelieve that I shall ever find this turgid sludge acceptable to my palate. Oh, for a muse of fire to sing of finest Java and the Blue Mountain blend.
Should we wake the others?
Jack had come into the room so silently that even Ryan's razored combat reflexes hadn't detected him. The albino teenager was barefoot and wore only cotton pants and a short-sleeved shirt, open all the way down. His stark white hair blazed like a mag flare in the dim light of the oil lamp, and his red eyes glowed in sockets of wind-washed bone, like the embers of a dying fire.
Might as well.
Sure you don't want me to come with you?
No, Jack. It's not your fight this time.
Wasn't your fight when Christina and Jenny got chilled. Didn't stop you. Wouldn't stop me.
I know that. But there's work to do here on the spread, Jack. I know that you keep telling me you don't intend to stay here. Not now. When we move on in a few weeks after I find Trader, then you can decide. Stay or come, whichever you want, Jack. But for now, there's things to do here.
Yeah, guess so.
Jack went out as quietly as he'd entered, but they heard him going to rouse the rest of the household.
Grief burns to the very core of his soul, Ryan. By the three Kennedys, I know the feeling well enough. To lose a wife and a child.
Doc paused as Christy strode along the hall and joined them. She was wearing a white silk blouse, hanging loose over dark blue riding breeches. She wore blue leather western boots.
Good morning, gentlemen. I don't suppose you fried up enough breakfast for anyone else, did you, lover? Of course you didn't.
I would deem it an honor to be allowed to go and cook some...
No thanks, Doc. Best wait until everyone else is up and around. Then we can get organized.
JB appeared, wiping his wire-rimmed spectacles on a length of clean linen cloth.
Weather tastes good. Fresh northerly. Go at first light?
That smells almost like coffee.
Mildred stood behind JB, one hand resting on his arm. She was stocky in build, with her hair knotted into tiny beaded plaits. Like Doc, Mildred came from another time. She'd been 36 years old, unmarried, one of the leading world authorities on cryogenics and cryosurgery. Her other claim to fame was that she had won the silver medal in the free pistol shooting and the last ever Olympics in 1996. Then, in December of the year 2000, the black woman had gone into the hospital for some minor abdominal surgery. Things had gone wrong. Seriously wrong. With the monumental irony that the blind lords of chaos so love, Dr. Mildred Wyeth had been frozen in an attempt to preserve her life. Then the missiles had blackened the skies, and civilization disappeared up its own nuclear-powered fundament. Along with a number of other patients, Mildred had been locked into the dreamless sleep for nearly a century, until awakened by Ryan and the others, and brought back to life in Deathlands. Now everyone was up and bustling about, except for the youngest of the group, Dean Cotter. It had only been in the past year or so that Ryan had known that he had a son. His brief sexual encounter with Dean's mother, Sharona, had occupied only a few minutes of Ryan's life. Then, like a bolt of lightning at a summer picnic, he found the boy, then 10 years old.
Anyone seen Dean?
Heard movement when I came past. Here he is. Morning, young man.
Hi.
Dean's black curly hair was glistening flat against his head, where he'd stuck his head under the pump. Ryan looked at his friends. They were all together. The dawn air tasted of sagebrush. It was a heaven of a sunrise, the first spears of light darting into the golden tops of the cottonwoods alongside the small creek. At the sound of the front door opening, a trio of delicate-necked deer turned as one. For a moment, they stood frozen there, sniffing the damp-scented air. Then they darted away toward the rising ground to the east of the ranch house. Jack watched them go.
Freedom.
Looks like it'll be a good one.
The squat shape of the LAV-25 stood ready and waiting in the shadows to the west of the spread. It had been loaded with all the supplies and gas that could be spared, along with tools, water, and ammo. Everyone stood in the morning sunlight, nobody quite knowing what to do or say.
Despite the sun, I fear that the chill air will play the old Harry with my lumbago. So, friends, stand not upon the order of your going, but go, in the name of God, go. Take the best care of yourselves.
What's plumbago, Doc? Sounds like something you eat.
Not quite, young man. Rather, something that eats you. But let that pass. Yes, let that pass.
Ryan stooped to hug his son.
Yeah. Look after things. I'll be back soon.
Don't worry, Dad. I'll be fine.
We'll all be fine.
Mildred stood on tiptoe to kiss Ryan on both cheeks. She smiled at JB.
We said our goodbyes earlier.
So did we. Look after him, JB, and bring him back safe to me.
Sure.
JB nodded to everyone, the light sparkling and dancing off the polished lenses of his glasses. Jack was leaning against one of the uprights at the front of the long veranda. Ryan turned, caught his eye, and waved a casual hand, getting a nod of the white head in return. JB clenched his fist in a salute to the albino.
Bring Trader back. Heard a lot. Be double great to meet him.
The goodbyes were done. Each man made sure that his own personal weapons were safely aboard the armored combat vehicle. JB put his Uzi machine pistol on the metal floor of the vehicle, beside the driving control position. Carefully, he placed his pride and joy alongside it. The Smith & Wesson Model 4000 12-gauge looked at a quick glance like a fairly ordinary 8-round scattergun with a pistol grip and a folding butt. But its ammunition was a country mile out of the ordinary. The blaster fired murderous Remington flechettes, each round containing 20 of the tiny inch-long arrows. Ryan had his Panga with a hand-honed 18-inch blade sheathed at his belt. The pistol, balancing it on the right hip, was the Sig Sauer P226. Just under 8 inches in length, with a barrel that was just a bare thumb's width below 5 inches, the weapon weighed in at a sturdy 25.5 ounces. It held 15 rounds of 9mm ammunition and had a push-button mag release. Its built-in baffle silencer had seen better days. The rifle went behind the co-driver's position, where the navigator would probably have once sat. There was a scratch on the walnut stock, and Ryan spat on it, rubbing at the mark with the heel of his hand. The Steyr SSG-70 was a bolt-action blaster with a mag of 10 rounds of 7.62mm ammo. It carried a beautiful starlight night scope, as well as a laser image enhancer. Though Ryan lacked Mildred's uncanny skill with firearms, he figured that he could still put a bullet through a man's head with the Steyr, in good weather and visibility, at a range in excess of 600 yards. The LAV had once had a powerful 25mm Bushmaster cannon, but there was no ammo for it, though they had a couple of belts of 7.62mm rounds for the coaxial machine gun. JB re-emerged and gave a last wave to the remaining friends, getting a blown kiss from Mildred. Then he slipped back down through the hatch. Ryan